words, and feel a strange sadness. We'd bonded, me and that bag of shit. I'd miss it. I'm forced to look away when the officer places handcuffs on my wrists, then, with his hand on my head, lowers me into the back of the car. As the adrenaline wears off and the numbness fades, I realize how damn cold I actually am. I shiver and shake. My teeth chatter and my head twitches. This only adds to my alcoholic bum facade and even earns me a sympathetic look from the officers, who talk as if I'm not in the car.
Was that dog shit or human shit? Never can tell with these people. Did you see how that Duchanan prick freaked out? Funniest thing I've seen in a while. Who the hell falls for that anyway? It's the oldest trick in the book. Hey, sweetheart.
I don't acknowledge the cop.
I'll buy you a week's worth of liquor if you can pull off your little stunt at 2189 West Butro Street. Hell, it'd be worth 2 weeks worth of liquor to see my ex-wife stomp out a flaming bag of shit.
They laugh, but they don't know how hard dog shit is to come by around these parts. Just as I start to get warm, they drag me back out into the cold and inside the police station. I've been to jail a couple of times. Nothing serious, but I've spent a few nights in county for some unpaid tickets. Been arrested once or twice for disorderly conduct. So I'm surprised when they don't take any of my personals, or take my picture, or my name. They simply lead me to a big cell that faces the front offices. Bunk beds line the wall, but only one is occupied. I'm given a pillow, sheet, and blanket, gently pushed inside, and then the door slams shut behind me, waking the only other person in the cell. She's as big as a damn house, looks as mean as a rattlesnake. When I try to take the bunk across from her, so I can keep one eye on her at all times, she shakes her head. I move to the next bunk. She shakes her head again. It continues like this, me stopping at a bunk, looking to her for permission, her shaking her head, me moving along to keep from having my face bashed in. At the last bed in the back of the room, she lets out a grunt and rolls over. I make the top bunk the best I can and climb in fully dressed. It doesn't take me long to figure out why she forced me to sleep back here. It's colder than a damn witch's tit. I pull out my phone and I have 1% battery life left. So I watch the video of Luke Duchanan freaking out until my phone dies. And it's the best damn 37 seconds of my life. 5. I wake up to my cellmate staring at me. Her feet are flat on the floor and we're eye to eye. This woman scares the shit out of me.
You're snoring.
I hate when people snore. I know how annoying it can be, so I apologize. I'm sorry. I'll roll on my side. I start to roll away from her, but she shakes her head.
I got a better idea.
Really? Rolling on my side usually works. My grandma used to make my grandpa...
Stop breathing.
I stare at her in confusion. Her stare tells me if I can't stop breathing on my own, she can make it happen. I draw in a breath and fill my cheeks with air. She nods in satisfaction and stomps back to her bunk. The springs groan beneath her weight when she shifts on her side so she can watch me. Just before I lose consciousness, the door to our cell opens.
You, the cop points at me. Let's go.
I untangle myself from the blanket and jump down. As we pass my cellmate, who growls at me, probably because she can hear me breathing, I do something really stupid.
Your breath smells like a fart,
I hiss, shooting her the finger. Before she can get out of her bunk, I'm safely out of the cell and the door is closed, trapping her inside. I smile because I'm a free woman and she can't kill me.
Sit.
The officer points to a metal folding chair that sits in the aisle next to his cubicle. I sit down as he pours a cup of coffee and hands it to me. He tosses a plastic spoon, a couple packets of sugar, and some powdered creamer beside it. I fix my coffee while he takes a seat and starts punching the keys on his keyboard with only two fingers. He looks bored. His suit is too small. Glasses smudged, hair combed over a bald spot. Leaning back in the chair, he crosses his arms behind his head and stares at me.
The guys who picked you up said you started a fire on someone's porch.
I nod and take a sip of my coffee.
Wanna tell me about it?
I give him an edited version of the truth, starting at the part where I arrived at Luke's home. It takes me a while to tell the story because he can't stop laughing, and he keeps interrupting me by repeating everything I tell him in the form of a question. By the time I'm finished, he's fighting to hold in his laughter, and I have the urge to punch him in the face.
Look,
he says, once he can speak without smiling.
Since you were only picked up on a minor infraction, I'm gonna let you walk, if you can find someone to come pick you up.
Can't I just leave on my own? He shakes his head and gives me a hard look.
I'm doing you a favor. Don't push it.
What if I don't have anyone to come get me?
Then I'm gonna have to book you, and feed you, and it'll cost money, and I don't want to do that.
I wouldn't mind being booked. I could serve my sentence, have some breakfast, and use the time in solitary to figure out how in the hell I'm going to get home, since my flight left 3 hours ago. Problem is, I pissed off my cellmate. So now, either I find someone to come get me, or I die. My eyes move to the front pocket of my coat. Part of my brain screams at me that it's a bad idea. The other says this is better than death. The officer drags his phone across the desk and sets it in front of me, then leaves, telling me he'll be back in a few. I pick up the receiver and punch the numbers in quickly while I still have the nerve. Someone answers on the first ring.
Mr. Swagger's office?
The lady speaks in one of those annoying, high-pitched tones only pretty people have.
Hello, this is Penelope Hart. I'm a friend of Mr. Swagger's.
It just came out. I couldn't stop it.
How can I help you, Miss Hart?
The woman sounds bored. I feel stupid. I'm probably not the first person to call his office and say I'm his friend.
Well, I can't do this.
My shaky hands fumble with the receiver until I get it back in the cradle. How could I be so stupid? So reckless? So just stupid? Jake Swagger wouldn't come get me. He hates me. His loss. If he had invited me to stay for dinner, he could have gotten to know the real me. I could have charmed him, made him love me. Then he would have forced me to get a restraining order against him, because men tend to cling to a woman like myself. But he missed out on all of my fabulousness and chose to only acknowledge the bad things, like me breaking into his apartment and putting a bag of dog shit on his counter. So the only thing Jake Swagger might do for me is send his lawyer down here to press charges. He'd make sure I lived out my final moments with Big Bertha, who will no doubt sit on me and breathe in my face until I die a slow, agonizing death. I'm on my third cup of coffee. I have no clue where in the hell the cop is. The clock on the wall says he's been gone for over half an hour. I could probably just sneak out the door without anyone noticing. If I wasn't wearing a ridiculous top hat that has earned me a bunch of funny looks from everyone in the office. Thanks a lot, Alfred. I stare at the card in my hand, contemplating calling the cell number listed on the back. Jake's cell number. I could hear his voice, maybe apologize, or I could just wait until I get home and drunk dial him. If I make it home. Think, Penelope. Emily. Emily knows people in Chicago, right? She interned here. Surely she made a friend or three other than Luke Buchanan. Perhaps she could call one of them and get them to come pick me up. Then I could get my mom to wire me some cash to get home. I know she doesn't have it to spare, but she'll no doubt make it happen. And I can sell my body to some desperate man to pay her back, or my soul to the devil, or my imminent fame to the Illuminati.
Penelope?
I look up at the man standing over me, and just stare. He's like that guy's hot best friend,
The one who wears the smirk, has the playful attitude, the sexy look. The one you're hoping the heroine's best friend will hook up with so there will be a book too. My eyes roll at my stupid writer brain. Yes? He scans me from my top hat to my dirty boots, studies the card in my hand a moment, and then meets my gaze. He lifts a brow.
You're Penelope?
I'm not sure if that's amusement or skepticism. I get them confused. Yep, and you must be Captain Obvious. He laughs and reaches for a bottle of water next to the coffee pot. With his back to me, I give him a full body scan. Nice ass, nice build, big feet, friendly, charming. Seems like the kind of guy you could have a good time with. Yet there's something off about him. He wears a gun, but not a badge. A suit and not a uniform. A detective? But his suit is really nice. Fitted, not the cheap twill that most detectives wear. And he doesn't have a gut, or tired, worried lines around his face.
I can pull it out and let you look at it.
I jerk my eyes from his crotch to his smiling face. I was looking at his ass. He turned around. Not my fault. Sorry, I don't have my reading glasses. I'm treated to another throaty, sexy laugh of his. If I wasn't so hooked on the vision of my that guy, I'd use this hunk from my muse.
Touché, Miss Hart. You ready to get out of here?
Who are you? He grins and sticks his hand out. I shake it. Of course, it's warm and strong, and all the wonderful things masculine hands are supposed to be.
Cam Farve.
Detective? Officer? Lieutenant?
Just Cam, but you can call me Sir if you want to.
I ignore his waggling eyebrows. So, if you're not a cop, what are you?
I'm a real boy,
he says, in this really impressive Pinocchio voice that has me smiling.
Come on, Jake cooked breakfast.
Oh, shit. Jake sent you to get me?
Yeah.
He points to the card in my hand.
Said you called the office. Line got disconnected. Must be the storm. But we traced the number back to here.
You traced the number? Oh, my God. What kind of guy is this Jake Swagger that he can trace a number and have someone here to get me in less than an hour?
Caller ID, babe. Ever heard of it?
I'm so stupid. I should probably ask more questions. Like, who is this guy really? Who is he to Jake? His lawyer? Brother? Friend? Lover? And why in the hell would Jake want me to come to his house? Why is he cooking breakfast? He should have a cook that does that. A middle-aged woman who is having a secret affair with Ross. Or Alfred.
So, you coming or you want to stay here?
I'm coming. I'm coming. He shoots me a sexy grin as he scans me from head to toe.
Even through all those clothes, I can tell you have a wicked little body to go with that pretty face and sassy mouth. Now I see why Jake is so anxious to have you.
Have me? What does that mean? I can't think because Cam is walking and I'm struggling to not look at his ass. I lose the battle. But I only look for a second. An SUV with the engine still running sits parked next to the building. Not your normal cop SUV. A damn Range Rover with blacked-out rims, windows, and a bumper that could take out a tank. He opens the passenger door, and I'm assaulted with the scent of cologne and leather. So intoxicating. So erotic. So panty-melting that I glance in the back seat, wondering if I stripped naked and laid down across it, would it be enough to convince Cam to handcuff me to the door and have his way with me? I really need to stop reading them damn dirty books. I stare out the window at the white scenery to avoid looking at Cam. We're not even out of the parking lot, though, when his voice has me turning in my seat to face him.
You're different.
What do you mean? His eyes flit from the road to my top hat. I pull it off and try to smooth my hair. It's a long story.
I bet you have a lot of good stories considering your line of work.
He winks, like he knows some big secret. I'm sure Jake told him I was a writer. No doubt he Googled the title of my book the moment I left, which is probably how he figured out my name. I want to tell Cam that there's nothing very suggestive about a writer having a lot of good stories, but I don't want to sound like an asshole. Yeah, I guess I do. I shrug my shoulders and look back out at the passing city. Cam's phone rings, and as much as I want to eavesdrop in his conversation, I can't get the idea that something isn't quite right about all of this out of my head. Why would Jake save me? Why is he anxious to have me? Why would he allow me back into his house after so rudely kicking me out? Is he cooking breakfast because he feels guilty for denying me dinner?
Jake's going to be pissed about this, Lance, Cam says on a laugh, as if Jake's anger brings him joy.
Since Jake's anger has a similar effect on me, I tune in to the conversation. Of course, it ends the moment I do. What's Jake going to be pissed about?
The FAA has grounded all flights out of Chicago.
Good. Maybe I'll be able to reschedule my flight without having to pay for it. Which means I won't have to rob a liquor store on my way out of town. Was Jake going somewhere? I feign nonchalance. Cam shoots me a disbelieving look and an eye roll.
Nah, he rented donkeys for the two of you.
What?
We expected cancellations with commercial flights, but they just announced that no plane would be cleared for departure, which means even the almighty Jake Swagger can't get permission to put his bird in the air.
He has a plane? He gives me another sideways glance.
You feeling okay?
Am I? I'm a little cold, a lot of tired, and I'm starting to get the sniffles. I'm fine. He doesn't need all of that other information. Cam's on the phone again. Something about a generator that needs to be replaced ASAP. Boring. But I listen. Did you know backup generators can have backup generators? Wonder what happens when the backup to the backup goes out. We pull up at Jake's apartment building, and Alfred is all smiles, until he opens the door and sees me. Undeterred by his scowl, I give him my best pageant grin as I slide out of the car. Good morning, Alfred. So great to see you again. By the way, this hat is bitchin'. I've gotten so many compliments on it. Cam laughs as he steps beside me, twirling his key ring on his finger as he pulls open the door. Alfred just grunts a response and begrudgingly holds open the door to the building for us. He doesn't follow us to the elevator this time. Instead, he moves behind the podium and snatches up the phone. As me and Cam continue down the hall, I hear him say,
"They're on their way up now, sir." Never known Alfred to frown at anybody.
Cam lifts a brow at me as we step into the elevator. Then, as if he just thought of something, he gives me a wolfish grin.
You two got history or something?
Or something. In the elevator, I press my nose to the wall and hum as we shoot like a rocket to the 30th floor. Cam says nothing, but I see him smile as we step into the foyer. My gut churns and twists. I think I may vomit. Not from fear like a normal person, from excitement, like the crazy person I am. Okay, and maybe a little bit of fear. Is Jake going to tell me he's sorry for being a jerk? Or demand I pay for his shirt? Take me in his arms and hold me? Or sell me as some sex slave? Kiss me on my head and tell me I'm pretty? Or blame me for some shit that's missing? Some secret shit that he lost? And his plan is to set me up to take the fall? Cam opens the door and... bacon. I smell bacon. All the bacon. My mouth waters and I moan. Then I moan for a completely different reason. Before me stands Jake Swagger, at a stove, dressed in nothing but a pair of low-slung flannel pants, spatula in hand.
His back ripples in muscles and tanned flesh. His shoulders are wide, hips narrow, everything cut and sculpted, yet soft and smooth. The pop of bacon grease and the low voice of the news anchor man are the only sounds in the room. I instantly picture this moment as a real-life, cheesy Hallmark movie. Snow falling outside the window, everything warm and homey. I'm fresh out of bed, sleepily admiring my prince who got up early just to cook me breakfast. Of course, I can only imagine this, because I've already scanned the room for mafia and shady-looking people who might want to kill me for stealing something I really didn't steal. There's no one. Just me. Jake. Third wheel Cam. Air. Opportunity. My mind goes from a PG rating to triple X rating in a matter of seconds when Jake's muscles contract as he slings a dish towel over his shoulder. I imagine me over his shoulder, legs around his neck, vagina in his face. He pivots to face me. I smile, my cheeks flushed from my dirty thoughts, eyes half-masked from lust. But I can play it off, like maybe I just woke from a nap, like in my Hallmark fairy tale. He'll say, "Good morning, beautiful." I'll be all shy and sweet. He'll say my blush is pretty, then kiss me breathless. Sigh. I can't believe I'm really here. Me, Penelope Hart, author in progress, standing in the kitchen of a luxurious sky-rise penthouse apartment with my very own half-naked that guy, and who could be his hot best friend, and no mafia, and bacon. Not even divine intervention could ruin this moment. 6. Jake Swagger is not God, but damn can he ruin a moment. He faces me with no smile. Instead, I'm met with a look of utter horror and disgust. No, "Good morning, beautiful," either. Only a, "What the fuck is she doing here?" "What?" Cam asks. Jake and I stare back at one another as he continues to speak. Jake looks like he might detonate. I study the two little red dots on his second and sixth ab. Bacon grease splatters? Probably. Who the hell fries bacon shirtless?
"You said pick her up and bring her home. I assumed home was here. Did you want me to take her to the other apartment?"
"Squee, he has two apartments." Jake sobers, grows an inch or two in height. His muscles tense, forehead vein protrudes, fists clench. He's such a dominant.
"You're Penelope Hart."
I refrain from using my Captain Obvious joke again, and from asking him if I can touch his chest, or to abandon his calm, deep tone and say my name again like he might if he was coming. "I am."
"You called my office."
"I did?"
"You told them you were a friend of mine."
People really toss that word around too much. I blame Facebook. I mean, how many of your Facebook friends are truly your friends?
"We're not Facebook friends."
"No, we're not."
"We're not real-life friends. We're not acquaintances. You're not even a friend of a friend."
I tilt my head and narrow my eyes at him. "You sure about that? I bet I'm a Facebook friend of a Facebook friend. You'd be surprised how small this world really is. Especially when you have a social media presence like I do. I have like 4,000 likes on my page. And I've hit my 5,000 max friends limit." Several moments of intense silence pass. Then Jake points a spatula toward the door.
"Get out."
"No, I'm not going to get out." I cross my arms over my chest to hide my trembling fingers. "Not until I know what's going on. You're the one who had me picked up. I want to know why."
"Because I thought you were someone else."
"Wait. You know another girl named Penelope Hart?"
"I thought you were Miss Sims."
Now I'm really confused. "But I told them my name was Penelope. You just asked me if I was Penelope, so you knew my name wasn't Miss Sims."
For fuck's sake.
He runs his hand through his hair and huffs out an exasperated breath.
It was a misunderstanding on my part, okay?
How the hell did you mistake Penelope Hart for Miss Sims?
It's an alias. The name Miss Sims is an alias,
he shouts to the ceiling.
Mother of fuck, woman. You're like a goddamn fungus.
I smile. I can't help it. Because I'm growing on you? Jake's eyes close. He's trying to control his temper. Doing a damn good job of it, too. The silence is intense. Cam's laughter breaks it.
Wait,
he says, in between bites of bacon and sexy chuckles.
She's not Miss Sims?
He points at me and looks at Jake, who just glares at him. He's probably thinking what I'm thinking. You're just now figuring that out, genius?
Well, who is she? How do you know her?
His hand pauses halfway to his mouth, and his eyes roam over me from head to toe.
You're fake Miss Sims.
His attention shifts to a silent, brooding Jake for confirmation.
She's the one who faked everybody out? Who broke in here last night? This girl? This one? This is the one you claim is batshit crazy?
He wiggles his finger toward me again. Okay, now just hold on a damn minute. I hold a palm up toward each of them. Let me get this straight. You sent a car to pick up a woman whose name you don't know and whose face you've never seen, gave her full access to your penthouse apartment, told your staff to cater to her every need, was willing to bail her out of jail, cook her bacon, and you think I'm crazy?
That was Jake that called you crazy, babe, not me. Enough!
Jake snaps with enough malice in his tone to wipe the grin off my face and send a shiver of fear down my spine.
Get this woman out of my house, Cam, and find Miss Sims.
He tosses the spatula in the sink and with an eerie calm walks out of the kitchen and into his office. I tense, waiting for the door to slam, but it simply clicks shut. Well, that was anticlimactic, I mutter, a little annoyed that he didn't act a fool, or hug me. Cam's low laugh draws my attention. I find him leaning against the counter, shaking his head as he digs his phone from his pocket.
You're nuts, you know that?
I shrug because I am a little nuts. So now what?
Now I find the real Miss Sims.
He moves across the floor to tower over me.
And you, Penelope Hart, get to walk away from this knowing that you are the only woman in history to breach Jake Swagger's mighty fortress and leave unscathed.
Unscathed? Does that mean other women who have been here before me have been tied to a spanking bench and tasted his leather belt, then fucked into another dimension? Did they leave here in an orgasm-induced, foggy state with nothing but the stripes on their asses and the soreness between their legs to remember him by?
Yo, crazy girl, you get that?
Huh? He rolls his eyes.
I have to make a few calls, then we'll figure out the fastest way to get you back home, okay?
I nod. His face sobers and his tone is no nonsense.
Don't touch anything. Understood?
Fine. Can I at least use the bathroom?
Sure.
He points to the one off the kitchen.
Make it quick. I'll be back shortly.
You're leaving?
No. I'm stepping out of the room to make some calls.
Yeah. Okay. And what do I do when Jake comes out and kills me because I'm still in his apartment?
He'll be in there a while.
Cam pats the top of my hat, pushing it down over my eyes.
He has more bark than bite. Don't worry, he won't kill you.
I smile and lift my hat to look at him. Because he secretly likes me?
No, babe. Because it won't read well in the papers.
Oh.
Jeff, it's Cam Favre. I need a favor.
Cam's voice drifts as he walks out of the kitchen. I snag the rest of the bacon and pour myself a glass of juice. I glance at the table, then back at Jake's office door. Breakfast in the bathroom seems like the safest option, so I lock myself inside and eat with my back against the door. I try to figure out the deal behind this mysterious Miss Sims. Why would she use an alias? Who is she to Jake? Obviously nobody important. I mean, he hasn't even seen her damn face. Yet he's gone to great lengths for her. Is she a client of his? What does he even do? Stupid phone. If it wasn't dead, I could Google him. Finished eating and tired of thinking, I peel off my soiled clothes and turn on the shower. Forever seems to pass before the hot water warms my cold bones. Only then do I wash my hair, having to add water to the shampoo bottle because it's nearly empty, and scrub away the remaining stench of jail. Clean and shiny and smelling like something wonderful, I wrap my body in a big fluffy towel and smear the steam on the mirror with my hand. I look rough, tired. My brown hair, a usual curly tangled mess, is straight from the weight of the water and hangs halfway down my back. My olive complexion glows even darker against the white towel, making the gold flecks in my hazel eyes shine even brighter. I rummage through the drawers by the sink and find a brand new toothbrush and some toothpaste. Then I towel dry my hair and wipe the remaining water from my skin. Dressed in nothing but a towel, I peek out of the bathroom and find that I'm alone. Jake must still be in his office. Cam must be doing whatever it is he does. And the fear that Jake might kill me if he found me in his apartment must have washed away in the shower, because suddenly, the idea of watching TV, wrapped in that warm blanket, curled up on his couch, doesn't scare me in the least. Despite the scalding water from my shower and warmth of the living room, I still feel chilled. I have a stuffy nose. My head hurts. Bones are achy. I pray like hell I'm coming down with a cold. I'm a sucker for a damsel in distress, and though my that guy has proven to be a pain in the ass on both our encounters, I'm positive he'll take pity on me and nurse me back to health. In between my fantasy thoughts of him exiting his office and gathering me in his arms, reality surfaces and I'm forced to think like an adult. Today could have gone a lot differently. What if I hadn't made that call to Jake's office? What if I was stuck back in that cell with Big Bertha? What if Jake had called the police and had me arrested when he came home last night? Or when I showed up today? What if he does once he discovers I'm still here? I need a phone charger. I need to call Emily, upload my video, reschedule my flight, make Jake fall in love with me, write a best-selling novel about me and my that guy, introduce Cam to Emily, write another best-selling novel about the two of them, find a shark to loan me money until I get my millions. Someone knocks on the door. I mute Judge Judy and glance at Jake's office, waiting for him to charge from it to see who is here. When the knock sounds again and no one moves to answer it, I take it upon myself to do it, because answering the door in a house that doesn't belong to you is exactly what people with no sense do. The man on the other side of the door is Jake Swagger, 40 or so years from now. Other than the white hair and lines around his mouth and eyes, he looks just like him. Strong build, hard jaw, brooding expression, oceanic eyes. He even glares at me in annoyance and distaste, probably because I'm only dressed in a towel, but still, these damn mean mugging stares are getting old. "Hello, Mr. Swagger." Something about knowing who he is without really knowing makes me feel less inferior to him.
"Let me guess. You're Miss Sims."
Here we go with this shit again. Without waiting for my reply, he pushes past me. He makes some noise in the back of his throat as he does. Disapproval? Disgust? Both? "Actually, I'm Miss Hart, but you can call me Penelope."
"Where is my grandson?"
I knew it. I want to smile, fist pump the air because I was right. But I refrain from celebrating. I will not let my small victory interfere with my mission, to make a good impression on the future Jake Swagger. He's taking a call in his office. Maybe. Can I get you something to drink? I offer. But old Peepaw Swagger makes himself at home. He pulls open the cabinet on the entertainment center and grabs a decanter and a glass. I stand, willing myself not to fidget, as he pours a drink, then turns to me. He studies me while he sips his whiskey. At 8 in the morning. But hey, who am I to judge?
Do you not have clothes?
I flush and let out a nervous laugh. It's a funny story, really.
I doubt I'd find humor in anything pertaining to your line of work, Miss Sims. So please, spare me the details as to how you ended up answering a door that doesn't belong to you, dressed in only a towel.
It's hard to hold your chin up and be proud when you're dressed like I am, looking up at a man who carries himself with an air of authority. Not Steve Jobs authority. Not Henry Frick authority. Fucking Hitler authority. Good thing I'm not easily frightened. My name is Penelope. He makes that fucking noise again. I'm not as forgiving about it as I was a few minutes ago. He has about one more time to...
I sure hope he pays you well, although I can't imagine there's any sum of money that would be worth a person's dignity.
He looks me up and down with a slow shake of his head. His lip curls into the same scowl Jake wore when he found out the bag on his bar was full of dog shit. What in the hell? I frown in confusion. I'm not sure I understand.
You should. I used small words.
Why, this old bastard. Are you insinuating that I'm stupid, Mr. Swagger? He says nothing, just stares at me with this hard, stoic expression. His attempt to make me feel inferior awakens my pride. My pride fuels my anger. My anger charges my words, and my words spew from my mouth before I can stop them. I asked you a question, Mr. Swagger. I'd appreciate an answer. His brow twitches a tiny bit. The movement is so minuscule, I might have missed it if I wasn't studying his face so hard.
Your southern accent is genuine, as is your pride.
He takes a seat in one of the overstuffed leather chairs, crossing his legs like a lady might, yet he makes it look so masculine.
That couldn't have come cheap, but I'm sure you're worth every penny.
He lifts his glass to me as if he just gave me a compliment or some shit. He's not paying me.
Did he pay you to say that too?
Something is going on here. There are a number of reasons as to why I haven't quite figured it out. Exhaustion, dehydration, flu-like symptoms, shitty day. But I'm collecting pieces of the puzzle, and I'm pretty sure the mysterious missing Miss Sims is a...
If you're not here because Jake hired you, then why are you here?
Because I broke into his house, got kicked out, set a bag of dog shit on fire, went to jail, called Jake's office. He thought I was Miss Sims using my given name, sent someone to get me, discovered the truth, and now I'm waiting on Cam to finish finding his hired help to take me home before Jake kills me. He doesn't seem like the kind of man who wants to hear all of that. Besides, he's kind of a judgmental asshole, and I'm not sure how many more of his insults I can take. How long do you have? I ask, stalling until I can think up a believable lie.
Long enough, Penelope.
I wither under his stern gaze, and melt a little because he remembered my name, which is kind of sweet. Already I start to forgive him for being such a butthole. The door to Jake's office opens, and I'm saved from the truth, and graced with another view of his naked torso.
Grandfather.
Jake gives him a quick nod before drinking me in. His perusal slow. Real slow. Like cream rising on clabber slow. Pouring peanut butter slow. In a nutshell, Jake Swagger, the young, hot one, is looking at my naked arms, legs, and the top part of my bare chest Like his grandfather isn't even in the room and he has all the time in the world. Did I mention that his slow gaze is hot too? Like fire hot, lava hot, throw me on an open flame until I disintegrate to ashes hot. His look suggests he wants to eat me. It's all I can do not to rip this towel from my body and spread myself open on his pristine white couch like a Sunday morning Shoney's buffet.
So, this is the girl,
Grandfather asks, a hint of something I can't decipher in his tone.
She's a far cry from the women I'm used to seeing you with.
I flush at his compliment, maybe?
I'm impressed. She's charming, polite, genuine.
Jake straightens a little and that glint of slow fire fades from his eyes.
And you discovered all of this in less than 5 minutes?
Grandfather stands and pulls at the cuffs of his jacket.
I don't believe it's been that long, which is why I'm impressed. In the same given time I've spent with the women you usually surround yourself with, I come to much different conclusions. They're entitled, selfish, rude. They're overpriced whores, Jake, and everyone knows it.
Another puzzle piece slides into place. Jake pads across the room, barefoot, to the decanter and pours himself a drink. Do these people not know it's only 8 in the morning?
I've never been one to care about what anyone thinks. You should know that by now. Nevertheless, the gesture is appreciated. Yeah? And what gesture is that? That you would be so kind as to go to such extreme lengths to hire someone who could actually pass as a lady.
Jake snorts at that. I want to flip him the finger and remind Grandfather, again, that I'm not being paid. But he speaks before I can.
You may not care about what anyone thinks, Jake, but your actions reflect on all of us. You mean you?
Precisely. Grandfather glances over at me with a hint of a smile on his face. But his eyes are still hard, still cold. I bet he has some evil in him. And his look, along with the standoff between these two powerful men, has my writer brain going crazy. Jake probably works for his grandfather's company. Grandfather is retiring, wants Jake to take over the company, do things his way. Jake has other plans, but he can't act on those plans until he's president, which means he has to do whatever his grandfather says until he's released from his metaphorical hold, even if that means being someone he isn't, which is probably why Jake is an asshole. Why he's hardened himself against his true feelings. He's really a nice guy, but he has to be a dick to appease his grandfather so he doesn't look weak. This book is going to be so fucking good. I tune back into the conversation that is somewhat lighter, but still tense. Grandfather pulls something from his pocket. I can't see exactly what it is, but it looks like a business card. I move closer.
I know you have a soft spot for small-time entrepreneurs.
Grandfather passes Jake the confirmed business card.
Canton said he'd never sell. He has no choice. Put all his capital into another idea and lost it to an established patent from the late 90s. His company isn't of much interest to me, but with a little help from you, it could go places. Still, he'll be a hard sell. He has a lot of pride.
At that, his eyes move to me. I drop my head and study my nails.
I'll give him a call next week. You'll talk to him at the party tonight.
Grandfather's tone leaves no room for negotiation. Jake's jaw tightens, but he doesn't say anything.
Until then.
He nods to Jake, then to me, turns on his heel and walks to the door in long, purposeful strides. The instant he leaves, I whirl around and face Jake. Miss Sims is a whore, isn't she?
You ask that question like you expect me to answer it.
I throw my hands up. Of course I expect you to answer it, considering he thought I was her. You know what he asked me when I told him you weren't paying me? He asked me if you paid me to say that, too.
Jake's not listening to me. He's looking at my chest. I look, too. And my tits are just about to bulge out of the towel. I cross my arms and take a seat on the couch, then pull at the end of the towel to try and cover more of my naked legs. Where the hell is that blanket?
So is she? A whore?
Penelope, please,
Cam says, striding into the room.
Whore is so 1996. Jake prefers the term escort.
He drops down in the ottoman, never looking up from his phone. Jake shakes his head.
Do you ever shut up? What? You do? How about we discuss what's really important? Like what the fuck she's still doing here? I told you I wanted her gone.
Cam shrugs.
You said to find Miss Sims, too. I believe that takes precedence. So take a seat. Calm the fuck down. Let me do my job, then I'll get rid of her.
Get rid of her. Shit. What is he going to do? Get me out of town or feed me to the fishes? Cam's speech mellows Jake, at least a little bit. He runs his hands through those beautiful black locks and takes a seat on the opposite end of the couch. One cushion separates us. We're that close. So close, I bet I could smell him. While his focus is on Cam, I pull in a deep breath through my nose. My left nostril makes this weird, snotty noise before it clogs up and cuts off my air. It's the most disgusting thing ever. Maybe Jake didn't hear it. He heard it. I get his usual glare. Not really repulsive, just his signature anger. Or more like raw, undulated hatred. He says nothing as he stands and swaggers to his office. I wait for the door to slam, but he returns carrying a suit jacket. He pulls something from the inside pocket, tosses the jacket across a chair, and reclaims his seat. Then, to my horror and amusement, he offers me a handkerchief. A real one. Like a cloth one. I take it, wondering if it's the first time he's had the opportunity to use it. I bet he carries one every day and hopes some woman with a runny nose will come along and make all the trouble of remembering to put it in his pocket worth it. I hide my grin behind the handkerchief and dab at my nose. I want to just blow the shit out of it, but that'll have to wait until we reach that level of comfort all couples do once they fall in love. For us, I'm guessing it'll only take a couple of days. Judge Judy calls a lady a moron. I focus my attention on that rather than the eyes burning in the side of my head. Chill bumps break out across my skin. I wish I could say it's from his arctic glare. Truth is, I'm freezing.
Are you cold?
Jake's tone is flat, uncaring, and bored as if he asks only because he absolutely has to. Still, an unforced shyness takes root inside me at his attempt to be polite. A little. Without a word, he grabs the blanket from the floor and passes it to me. I try to touch his fingers, you know, so I can describe the spark I feel from our connection. But he ruins it by pulling away before I can. Thank you. He shakes his head.
Don't.
I tuck the blanket around me and my legs beneath me until the only thing visible is my head. Don't what?
Don't feign sweet innocence. Don't act all shy and submissive.
Submissive? He said submissive. He's a dom. I fucking knew it.
Grandfather fooled, but not me.
Huh? Stupid daydreams. Sorry, could you say that last line one more time? His lips thin and he pulls in a deep breath through his nose.
What I'd give for his nostril to clog up. I said, that little act you performed earlier might have my grandfather fooled, but not me.
What are you talking about? What act?
I've seen your true form. Remember that.
I draw my head back
and look at him like he's lost his friggin' mind. I'm sure I have three chins in this position, but I don't care. Your true form? Who the hell talks like that? What does that even mean?
You're prancing around my house, in my goddamned towel, answering my fucking door, charming my grandfather into believing you're some sort of saint.
He pokes his chest every time he says my. I look at the red spot forming. He'll definitely bruise there. I must have said that out loud, because he laughs, without humor. Don't think that's possible? It is. It's a bark-type laugh that people do when they find something unbelievable and have no words to say. Of course, Jake always has something to say.
You're un-fucking-believable.
No. What's unbelievable is that being an asshole really is hereditary. You should be proud. You and your grandfather proved a theory. I mean, even if I was an escort for hire, he didn't have to be such a prick about it. I'm glad Miss Sims wasn't here to listen to all those awful things he said about putting a price on one's dignity.
You finished yet?
No, I'm not. Why do you need to hire someone anyway? You're, like, rich. And hot. You could have any woman in Chicago.
I got this, Jake.
Cam leans forward, resting his elbows on his knees.
You see, Penelope, important people like Jake here don't casually date. He doesn't even have any female friends. Hell, he barely has any male friends. He's all work and no play, which is why it's both convenient and necessary for him to use an exclusive, very discreet, private escort service when they need a female companion. Like for holiday functions, balls, galas, charity parties.
He looks at Jake and smirks.
Grandfather's retirement ceremony?
But Jake is looking at me, as if he's anticipating my reaction. I try to remain indifferent. On the inside, I'm doing cartwheels. So he hired Miss Sims to attend his grandfather's retirement party?
Yes. Although Miss Sims is just a generic name we use. It rolls off the tongue a bit better than escort. Or whore.
I still don't see why he can't just ask, like, a friend or a colleague. Or why doesn't he just go alone?
He is sitting right here, Jake says. And damn it, I don't want to, but I turn to look at him. And when I see his beautiful, chiseled face, I can't stop the questions from coming.
I know I shouldn't ask. I know it'll piss him off. But this is important. I have to know. Do you use the escort service because they have to sign a NDA? His brows draw together in confusion, but he doesn't ask me to elaborate. He doesn't have to. Is it because you have some secret sex fetish you don't want people to know about? I can see how discretion is important for a man of your status. He stiffens. I should reassure him. I'm not judging. I cross my finger over my heart. This is strictly for research, I promise.
Research?
Yeah, you know, from my book. He nods slowly as if he just remembered I'm a published author with 4,000 followers and 83 reviews on Goodreads. 4-star average, thank you very much.
Your last one didn't do too well. Is that why you want to put me in this one? You hope people might actually buy it?
I ignore his jab. I don't want to put you in it, just someone like you.
Someone like me?
That's what I said.
Do you even know who I am?
Of course I do. I lie.
Enlighten me.
Shit. Well, I mean, I know your type.
My type?
I shrug. Rich, single, works too much, takes life too serious, controlling, ambitious, secretly generous. I take a breath. You're driven, independent, loyal. You have a soft spot for your mom, an issue with your father, and you've spent your life trying to get out of your grandfather's shadow.
I'm inferior to no one.
But you don't have your grandfather's respect.
I have his respect.
I tilt my head and study him through narrowed eyes. do you? He smiles, but it doesn't reach his eyes. Or that vein that's about to pop out of his forehead.
I know you too, Penelope Hart.
I thought I'd melt hearing him say my name, but all I feel is the ball of nerves in my throat that threatens to choke me. I'd blurted out my thoughts on his personal life with no regard to how they might make him feel, and now he was about to do the same to me. Fair enough. I force down my worries and flash him a smile. What do you know about me, other than what your grandfather said? I put my finger on my chin. What was it he said again? I can't remember. I know he left out irresistible, but that one is already pretty obvious.
I remember exactly what he said. His voice is cold. I throw his words back in his face and smirk.
Enlighten me.
He said you were charming.
I am charming.
Polite.
I'm that too.
Genuine.
Fake isn't even in my vocabulary.
And my favorite.
His eyes sweep over me. Not slow, not hot, but quick, callous. He's about to say something to hurt my feelings. I brace myself for it.
He thinks you could actually pass as a lady.
Jake, Cam warns, but Jake ignores him.
Now, my grandfather's definition of a lady is a woman with class, which you most definitely do not have. A woman of beauty. I'll be generous and give you a 6 on that. A woman who has achieved success.
I'm successful, I snap in my defense. I've accomplished something millions of people only dream about.
Setting a bag of dog shit on fire doesn't count, sweetheart.
I bite my cheek to keep from screaming at him, or kissing him because he called me sweetheart, even if it was in an indignant way. But that's just my crazy hormones talking. Truth is, the previous dig at my writing career, and now his blatant disregard of it hurts my feelings. Back in my hometown, I'm infamous for being the eccentric, mischievous daughter of the estranged, sorrowful lady who creates wood art and bakes the best lemon pie in 6 counties. When I was crowned queen at the Watermelon Festival my senior year in high school, people congratulated me and my mom for months. They figured that would be my greatest achievement. I mean, what more did a girl like me have to offer the world after being born out of wedlock, ditched by a sperm donor while still in the womb, and raised like a heathen by a single woman who had turned down every advance from every available, and some unavailable, man in town? I knew what the blue-haired ladies said about my mother during the beauty shop discussion held every Saturday. I'd witnessed her name on the prayer list at church on Sunday morning. I'd heard them, bless her heart, for having such a nuisance as a child more times than I could count. Eyes might roll when I walked into a room, but daggers were thrown at my mother's back every time she walked out of one. After high school, I enrolled in a local junior college. I'd exceeded the expectations of my small town, though I wasn't trying to, and because they didn't have anything bad to say about me, the gossip died down. The reprieve lasted until what will forever be known as the big breakup that happened my final semester of my second year in college. With 6 hours shy of an associate's degree under my belt, a broken heart and that fucking Watermelon Queen trophy on the mantle in the living room, serving as a constant reminder that the unspoken words of, I told you so, lingered behind every set of lips in Mount Olive, Mississippi, I decided to write a book. For my mom. For me. For the right to stick my middle finger up at every blue-haired old lady in town so they'd have something to really pray about. So I did. And 3 years later, I still do. Flip off the old ladies, that is. But I do it behind their backs because the Senior Citizen Center donated the money for a big billboard with my picture on it at the city limits that reads, Welcome to Mount Olive, home of best-selling author Penelope Hart. Gotta love a small town. What I'd do to be there now eating a slice of my mom's lemon pie. watching Jeopardy, and not having the question to a single answer. Instead, I'm 800 miles